you know the wafers that they give you that you can like melt, like come in a bag and then you can melt them to cover strawberries with them?
Oh, the chocolate
wafers. Like the melting wafers. You know those?
Yeah, not like a communion wafer.
Yeah, like the chocolate melting ones, they're for like baking. Well, I'll tell you what. I just keep the bag in the fridge and I just eat from the bag. I don't put them on the strawberries. I just skip a step and just eat it.
Yeah, why have those useless calories of the strawberry in there?
Exactly. I thought of it because before we started recording, I went down and I grabbed the bag and I grabbed like 5 wafers out of it.
So why do they call them wafer? They're just chocolate discs. They're not any different than any other chocolate.
Ask King Arthur Baking Company.
The flour company?
Yeah, I said it because they seem like they know a thing or two about baking.
Oh, okay.
But the person who made the ones that I was eating is Ghirardelli. Is it Ghirardelli or Ghirardelli? Let's start off with a debate where you can take one hard side and I can take the other.
I think it's Ghirardelli.
All right, perfect, because I was going to go Jira, so I'm really thrilled that you picked the one that's wrong.
We'll see. I suppose we'll see.
Okay, first of all, I think you might be right, but everybody can correct us in the comments on Adventures in Dog Photography on the Instagram, because I'm probably wrong. But also, are you acting slightly awkward because there's a delay in your headphones or something?
Yeah, I can hear everything like a split second later, and it's really screwing
terrible.
With me.
Yeah, that's absolutely terrible.
So I'm gonna try to kind of not have the headphones on, but that also means that if anything goes wrong in the podcast, I won't know about
Ooh,
it.
Ooh, this is exciting though, living on the edge.
Yep. All right, Henry Zebrowski.
Oh yeah, shout out. So it's very metal of you to live on the edge like that. So that's good. I can take this. If you're confused and befuddled, I'll take it. All right, I got this.
I'm certainly confused.
Sit down, relax, yep. Shut up. Here comes Kaylee Greer.
Oh, welcome to Adventures in Dog Photography.
The dog photography podcast where we talk about dog photography and chocolate wafers and pit bulls named Joshua. Mm-hmm. Amongst other things.
Kaylee, how's your week been?
Good, really good, actually. Yeah, everything's nice. I love Christmas. I'm so excited for Christmas. I've been doing like the most fun stuff, my favorite things of the Christmas season. One of them is to do my Christmas cards, like to sit down and like put them all in the envelopes and seal them and put on stickers and put on the address labels. I love it. Yeah. So
This whole episode is going to be about Christmas cards. Yes. So we might as well start off with the Christmas cards.
Yes, exactly. That's true. That's a good point. Yes. So Merry Christmas, everybody, and Happy Holidays, and Happy Hanukkah, and Happy Kwanzaa. And is there anything else I'm forgetting? Is there like a other cool
December holiday? Whatever it is, you better not forget it.
Happy New Year.
In trouble.
Solstice.
Yeah.
Lunar New Year.
Oh, is it?
I don't know. Chinese New Year.
I think that's in a different month.
Okay. Well, happy all the things, happy all the time. But this is my favorite season. December's always good because it's my birthday, and then it's Christmas, and then it comes New Year's, not in December, but kind of in December, because December 31st is good and fun. Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of that, Sam, we got to spend our Amex points, which I talked about in a previous episode.
Well, we absolutely don't, because they do not expire.
Are you sure?
Yes, I specifically looked
in. Did you ask Nicole Begley? She knows everything about Amex points.
Yeah, if you want
to... / credit card hacks.
If you want to hear more about Amex points, you can check out the Hair of the Dog Photography podcast from Nicole Begley.
Honestly, you can, though, because she just put out like an episode which was like a year-end. Like, here's what to do for your business in the next year. And it was like all business stuff, but it was really good. And I don't know if credit cards specifically were in there, but it was all the business stuff for dog photographers, which was excellent. So shout out.
Oh, thank God.
Plus it was her birthday yesterday, so double shout out.
Oh, happy birthday, Nicole.
Hey.
Yes, thank God there's someone to talk about all the business stuff for dog photography, because
it ain't me.
and yes, to put a button on that point, your Amex points do not expire. You can spend them as long as your account is in good standing.
Oh, that's amazing. But the other thing is, though, Sam, seriously, and I've been meaning to talk to you about this, so what better time than on the podcast publicly? is we have like what? Like 10 days or less to figure out what we need to buy before the like tax year closes in terms of business expenses and things we need for the business anyway.
Yeah.
So don't forget.
So don't forget.
So don't forget that we should be buying new things.
Well, what are you thinking about buying?
Lenses and computers and hard drives and drones and video cameras and probably adopt a couple more dogs.
I don't know if we can write off the adoption fees for the dogs.
You never know.
Yeah, our
if they're like 100% a dog breath model, maybe you could.
Yeah, our accountant always gives us, you know, good advice, but he's always also like, you guys have, you know, aside from the travel stuff, especially before we did all the traveling, he was like, you guys have no write-offs. You have no overhead.
Like, because we don't have a studio, really. Like, we do have our, like, headquarters, which is, like, more like an office with, like, computers and da-da-da, but that's, like, in our home.
Yeah.
And so we can write off, like, a portion of that.
We have three home offices, to be fair.
Actually, that's true. But I mean, that's like all we do is work. I suppose if we had like a ton of children or something, they'd be all in the bedrooms. But instead, the bedrooms are all work things, which is exactly how I like it.
Yep.
yeah. But so anyway, we should talk about that. We got to buy a bunch of stuff because I feel like there are a few things that like we should invest in, and then we might as well do it before the like tax year is out so we can do some write-offs.
Well, what lens are you looking at?
Oh gosh. Oh, well, the one I really want is I think it's $9,600.
Yeah.
I ain't getting it.
I don't know.
Unfortunately.
Why
you say I don't know. I say no.
Listen, Christmas is just around the corner.
So the thing is, I think though, and that's the 300mm, and isn't Canon's 300mm.
Yeah, the 2.8, the gigantic 300mm, yeah.
Oh boy, do I want it. The thing is though, Sam, and I don't know, we could have a discussion about this with all our photographer, you know, friends and listeners. Do you think that clients would notice the difference? Like from using a 200, 2.8? Like maybe like they might notice like a 1% difference, but I feel like to the untrained eye, $10,000 worth of lens really needs to be like crazy different. And I don't know if the 300mm would present enough of a difference. It would to me, to my eye, but is it enough to make it like make sense for, you know, using it for client shoots and stuff?
Okay, well, number one, you definitely don't want to base any of your Chris Miller time. You definitely don't want to base any of your choices around what you think a client will or won't notice because they won't notice. I don't know. They won't notice anything. Like,
well, no, and that's true. I mean, it's like, and anybody who's listening knows this. Like, often you'll like have this really successful shoot and everything's amazing, but you have like, you know, a handful of photos that are like, oh my god, like once in a lifetime, the absolute tip top cream of the crop of the bunch that you know are the best photos like you've ever shot, and you like try gently to push, you know, the client towards picking those as like their big artwork piece or whatever, but 9 times out of 10, 10 times out of 10, usually they pick something that you like maybe almost didn't even include in the gallery, but then you were like, well, it's really cute though because the expression's kind of silly or something, and they'll pick that instead of like the one that you know is the best thing you've ever done. But with that said, I do like to give clients like that, like choice. Because,
too many choices.
No, I know you say that, but they see their dog in such a special, specific way that I can't necessarily know exactly how they see them, right? So even if they pick a photo that to me seems simple, like it was, say it was shot with like a 50mm lens, natural light, it didn't take as much technique as maybe one of my more iconic photos, they may see something in that like moment and in that personality and in that little sparkle of time that I can't see or know because I just don't know the dog as well and I haven't spent a lifetime with that dog. You know what I mean? So it's okay. I don't want to disparage anybody for picking ones that I wouldn't necessarily pick because the art is subjective and that's so beautiful. But yes, I think that a lot of photographers could commiserate on the fact that like often the clients don't necessarily always pick your favorite.
Yeah, they're not seen with a photographer's eye. They're seen with, you know, an eye of like maybe someone that appreciates the art, but mostly someone that's, you know, in love with their dog. So it's a totally different, you know, perspective. But what I was going to say is that will it make a difference if you buy a $10,000 300mm lens versus the $1,200 13-year-old 70-200 even non-IS 2.8 version that we've been using
it on like the wrong type of camera at this point,
with the adapter and everything, like will there be a difference? Yeah, there'll be a difference, but you know, you're at the point in your career where the only differences you're going to see in your work are going to be like very small, like finer and finer grades of sandpaper, you know, to your work. When you're starting off in photography, you can make these gigantic leaps, you know, in your first year or first couple of years, like if you're really like you know, if you're really going, you know, balls to the wall, as you like to say, and, you know, and practicing your craft, you're going to see these gigantic leaps from, like, you know, someone who can barely take a photo to being able to take, like, a beautiful in-focus photo with, like, you know, backlight and a shallow depth of field. Like, that's a huge, huge difference to make from taking a snapshot. But as you get better and better, there's only so much further you can go, and those increments are going to be really fine, but you're going to make them. So is it worth the $10,000 to make that? Listen, only you can answer that.
I will say that I massively appreciate your support, because I love that about you, because you have always been so supportive in that. Listen, this is the last nice thing I'm going to say about you. Ever.
Yeah, I know.
Not just for this podcast, but ever. No, but here's the thing, is like, you are incredibly supportive, and you've always been like, yes, chase your dreams. Yes, if you need this thing, you deserve this thing, which is a wild voice to have in my head, because I have so much like bad mindset stuff from like childhood about what I do and don't deserve, you know? So it is really remarkable, and it's a beautiful quality, and how supportive you are. So thank you for saying that. I don't know how many people's partners would be like, yes, get a $10,000 lens. You definitely need that. So thank you. That's a unique perspective that you have. Although I don't know if I could ever convince myself to buy it. If anybody listening to this has that lens, so we're talking the RF 300 millimeter f/2.8 from Canon, which is, I think, is $9,600, at least in the US. If you have this lens, please tell me about it. I want to know everything about it, because if it's like really spectacularly worth it, I would love to know. And I would love to see some photos you've taken with it.
And if you have a spare one, like extra one laying around, and you just want to send it to Kaylee Greer,
shoot it my way.
We'll give you one shout out at the end of each episode of Adventures in Dog Photography. I think that's an even trade.
$10,000 shout out.
Yes.
Boom. So anyway, so Sammo,
yeah,
how have you been? What's your week like?
Oh, it's been good. Like, again, our December has been, you know, like kind of like a nice quiet-ish time. Like, there's little jobs dropping in here and there, but mostly it's been Christmas shopping and, you know, taking care of the dogs and trying to, you know, decorate the house and all that stuff. And it's been great, because we really hit the ground running next month in January.
Yeah, it's like about to be crazy again. It's just so nuts. But as I want to extend this time, this like this jovial Yuletide time, so I can have as much like time with my little family and time off as possible. It's been so nice. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, the first thing I want to do like every day when I wake up, though, is photograph a dog. So there is definitely some merit to like getting back to the swing of being like super booked and busy. And I'm so excited for that, too. But I will say that it has been nice sleeping in and eating lots of yummy food and baking things and then looking at the Christmas tree.
Yeah. And so next month, do we have any slots in our Hound Vision workshop?
Do you know what? I think there is one now. So Hound Vision was sold out since like the beginning, basically. I think since like a couple days after we announced it, or maybe a week or so after we announced it, and then it got full. But then Nicole messaged me just the other day, saying I don't even know what happened. She didn't tell me. I think she just said like a slot just opened up in the first week. So somebody must have like had a schedule conflict or something and pulled out. I'm not sure.
Well, if that's true.
I think that's true. And I think it's in week one, which is the January week.
Yeah.
They're both in January. Both like, in the January. Second one goes into February, though.
Does it by like a day?
2 days, I think.
Let me tell you about my conundrum with the first week.
Oh, yeah. I know. I know about this. Go ahead. You describe it in detail.
All right. So this is where I need to make like the decision. Do I be a good doobie and do my due diligence, or do I
so many D's?
Do I do something do I selfish?
Do I do doobie doos? Doobie doop 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 doop.
So as those listeners might know, I'm a very big professional wrestling fan.
Yes.
And one of their biggest events of the year is called the Royal Rumble, and it is taking place about 30 minutes away from where we are giving this workshop, and it is on the night of the last night of week one. And so I'm thinking, like, do I finish up the day and then duck out early and go to this wrestling event.
I don't think anybody would be mad about that. See, as long as you finished your like teaching duties for the day.
Well, no, here's the thing. I like to be at the breakfasts and you know, the lunches and all the, you know, after class stuff, because like it's not just about like, you know, here's what I have to say and now I'm going to go in the other room and you'll never see me again. It's a bonding true. Experience.
You're extremely involved. Yeah, no, it's not like you go like hide away or anything in your room. Hold on, I gotta dim the lights because, you know, inhibitions.
Okay.
It's too bright in here. I always forget to dim them until like it's later and then I'm like, oh my gosh, why is it so bright in my eyeballs? Okay, I'm back.
Wow, welcome back.
Thank you. Taking off my shoes.
Yes, very good.
Settling in.
So Kaylee, we're off next week from the podcast because we're stuck in between two holidays.
Okay, you just made the call. I wasn't sure if we were off next week, but I have to think about it because it's okay. Christmas is on Mondays, and then we'd have to record on like the Thursday. I mean, technically, I'm not sure if we have anything going on, but Craig might be here from photography. So from New Zealand, you guys must know Craig by now. Photography NZ on the old Instagrams. He is one half of Unleashed Education. Happens to be one of my closest friends on earth, and he will be here. But soon, but I don't know when, because he's just like me. He's like, I don't know. I don't have anything planned. I'm on a plane and I'm going here. And then I'm on a plane and I'm going there. And I'll let you know when I get close to New Hampshire. And I'm like, that's fine. But I think he's going to be here either next week or maybe early the week after. I'm not sure. But we're going to try to do adventures.
Yeah.
So I'm excited.
In dog photography?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Hey, they said the title. They said the title. It's in the name.
So we'll be off next week. So we won't see you again until the new year. So we're gonna talk today about, you know, the Christmas card that we shot today, but also a little bit of a recap for 2023.
Oh my God, are you serious,
just,
Sam?
Just
I showed up to this mic completely unknown with no ability to predict what was going to happen. I knew we mentioned the Christmas card. I didn't have anything prepared. And now you're like, we're doing all these things. And I'm like, Sam, I have 700 Christmas presents to wrap after we get off of this.
Kaylee.
Yes.
We're not going to do a minute by minute breakdown of 2023. Oh, we're not going to do it in real time. Oh. But here's what I want to do. I got some cool stats back about this podcast.
Oh,
for 2023.
All right. I'm nervous.
And I wanted to quiz you to see how well you know the podcast,
like our audience,
the podcast and our listeners. You ready?
96% United States of America.
All right, hang on.
Is that what you were going to go with?
So, all right, here's a quick question. How many podcast episodes did we record this year, not including this one, which will be the last one for this year?
Oh boy.
2023 only, not including when we started.
Oh God. Well, we're supposed to do every week, but we definitely missed a number of weeks, and then we had a big break leading up to Shutterhound.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just gonna guess 39 30 30 30. So technically, if there's 52 weeks in a year, that means we missed 12, which is 12.
Nope.
22.
Nope. Yep,
that's pretty bad. That's like a pretty bad, like, what? I don't think you should be recapping these stats. Listen, with our lovely listeners who are devoted, and then we're like, meh, meh, beep, boop. We're traveling. We have this. We have Shutterhound. Blah, blah, blah. Excuses, excuses.
I will say that, all right, so these stats come from the hosting service for our podcast, not from Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever. But for our hosting service, our podcast is in the top 25% of all podcasts that they do, which is
really
pretty cool.
That's really lovely.
All right, now here's the biggest question. What is the number one most popular city, not country or state or whatever, but city in the world for downloads of adventures and dog photography?
Des Moines,
I will
Iowa.
Give you a hint. I'll give you two hints.
Chicago.
One, it's not in the United States.
Wait, for real?
And two, we've been there.
London.
No.
Sydney, Australia.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Total guess.
Sydney, Australia.
Wait, you're telling me that's the number one like place that like number one city that listeners are from?
That's yeah.
What?
That's what I'm saying.
get right out of town and come right back to town.
Other noticeable cities include
notable.
They're also noticeable, but from space.
Yes.
Include Toronto.
Wow.
Melbourne.
Oh.
Boston.
Hey, how's your father?
And Chicago.
I knew it. The Bean. You know, I've never been to Chicago.
No?
Isn't that weird? Like, out of all the U.S. cities, I've been so many places. Mm-hmm. I would consider myself relatively well-traveled, but I have not been to Chicago.
Well, we should go.
What's another? Okay, shout out. Another big city you haven't been to. That's surprising. Go.
I've never been to...
Quick. Caracas.
Oh, you mean outside of the United States?
Anywhere.
Most big... Tokyo.
Oh, yeah, me neither.
Yes.
We should go to Tokyo.
Yeah.
I would love to go to Tokyo.
Or Kyoto. We can do Bar Kyoto.
Oh my God. What a great, some marketing genius, Sam.
Yep. It's right after.
Oh my God.
Right after Barkansas.
That actually sounds incredible. Truly. What a good idea.
Okay. Just a couple more little stats. Our most popular episode from this last year. Do you remember what topic do you think it was?
Oh, see, I was going to say Cody in the Cave because that was our first like ever one, right? Mm-hmm. But that is not this year.
Mm-hmm.
So this year, oh gosh, Joshua of some kind?
Nope.
Dobby of some kind.
It is Wild One in Banff.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, though. Is that because it was like, I don't remember when we did this, but was that like maybe one of our first ones of the year, which means it's had the most time to be listened to because it's been up like longer than everything else?
Yes and no.
Like, when was it recorded, does it say?
That's episode 15. But
so yeah, it was early,
right? But the other episodes on this list are actually lower than that, so it doesn't just track with how long it's been out. Okay, last question. How many minutes of podcasting did we record this year?
Oh man, I'm so nervous to say. It's so many minutes that I will never get back. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I don't even like to think about my my time debt or whatever. All right, 1 million minutes.
That's, why don't you do a real answer?
106,000 minutes.
That's a lot.
Okay, 3,600 minutes.
How many, you're closer, more realistic there. How many minutes are in an hour?
60.
Yeah.
And usually they're like 2 hours. Although, by the way, asterisk,
yep.
Today can't be that long. I know I always say that, but like it really can't because I really have
just start just start singing right now. Just sing your way out of it.
Puppies and long legs.
Let's do the math, right? So how many episodes did we do last year?
30. Would you say 2?
30. So they're about 2 hours long?
Yeah.
Let's call them 2 hours.
60 minutes. 120 times 30.
Yeah. All right. And so now you're going to do 60 times 60.
60 times 60.
Yeah.
360 minutes. 3,600 minutes.
Which is what you guessed before, right? It wasn't exactly what you guessed. So it was pretty close. So we recorded 2,522 minutes.
So some of them were less than 2 hours.
Yes.
That's good, though. That's good.
They're mostly, mostly a little bit less than
that's
2 hours.
It's really long for a podcast.
Yeah.
Truly.
So those are fun little wrap-up stats for this year, for this podcast.
Yeah, that's fun. Okay, so is that literally what you meant when you were like, go back to the year?
Boop, yeah. Boop, boop. Yes. Now, when we do come back, you know, for our next episode, I do want to do a little recap of some cool moments from 2023.
All right,
then,
that's cool.
And then things we're looking forward to for 2024. But for this episode, I do want to talk about a very special photo shoot that we had. And now you mentioned a little bit of the story about this during the last episode where we got the news.
I know. Shout out John Walker.
Yes.
I think, right? John Walker.
That was
the one that was the guy who sent me the news story about New Ipswich and all the cars falling off the road. So shout out to you and thank you for the insight, which I didn't have myself about my own town. That was so surprising. I've been meaning to get back to you, by the way. I'm so sorry. I meant to reply and it's been a week. Well, Sam's pointing at the mic. What do you mean?
I just have to point at the mic to remind you to talk into it.
I cooked dinner tonight.
Yep.
Did I say that directly center in the mic?
Yes, that's perfect.
Duh.
All right. So can you do a quick recap?
Wait, you weren't going to say anything about my dinner?
Your dinner was great. We had some raviolis. It was very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All I had to do was pour them from a frozen bag into boiling water.
Yes.
Thank you.
And you managed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very proud of you.
Thank you. So am I.
Okay, so why don't I recap what we talked about last week so we don't spend 45 minutes on the on something we've already talked about. So Kaylee and I were heading out to do some benign errands, and there was a snow squall happening.
It wasn't that benign, though, because there was going to be sandwiches involved, and they're my favorite sandwiches from Filo's Cucina in Groton, Massachusetts.
Wow.
And it is wow. Their food is wow. And we were going to get paninis, and mine was going to be a parma prosciutto, and yours was going to be an Italiano, and you were going to have no lettuce, add hots. And the last time I asked her to add hots onto it, she was like, what are hots? And she was like, hops, like, you know, that go in beer. And I was like, no, not hops, hots. And she's like, I've never heard hots.
So I know you're doing this on purpose.
Does anybody know what hots are? Does everyone know what hots are? Or do you think I mean hops? And if you think I mean hops, what is that going to be on a sandwich?
Great. So we were heading out to do some errands that included sandwiches, and we got about one block from the house before Kaylee said, I have a bad feeling, let's turn around. The power was out, like, around us, it was dark, it was snowing, it was icy, and so we turned around, and she's like...
Well, it was mostly because, like, I wanted to shoot the Christmas card, because I think if I had a bad feeling, I would, like, normally, and I had errands to do, I'd be like, screw it! Like, and I'd really live on the edge and just go for it. But I had that in the back of my mind anyway. Like, we have to shoot the Christmas card when it's snowing. And it's snowing! Okay, go ahead.
Great. So we turned around. We drove the one block back without incident, which was great. And yes, it did turn out that more than 30 cars in our town flew off the road that very evening.
At, like, literally that exact same time. On the road we were going on.
Yeah.
We were going to get on this road if we didn't turn around.
There's only one road in our town. So yeah, we would have wound up on it.
Woo, boy. We would have been in that news story, babe.
So we set out to shoot our annual Christmas card. And we did an episode last year where we talked about our past Christmas cards. But this one is very, very current. And I need to preface this by saying that if you're looking for that Christmas card image on Instagram right now, you are going to have to wait because we are going to drop it on Christmas Day.
Yeah, okay, so that's what I was going to say. We have a slight conundrum because I'm so excited to talk about this, but I'm also so scared to, like, spoil it for anyone who hasn't gotten their card yet, who's, like, a client of mine or whatever, or friends or whoever is getting the card this year. And I was so nervous I was going to spoil it before they got it and they wouldn't have that initial joy of opening it and to discover what it was. Mm. So we decided we will wait until Christmas Day to release the photo. So bear with us because a few of the details, because I don't want to spoil, like, the theme or whatever, will be a little vague. Mm-hmm. We'll still talk about, like, the technique of shooting the photo and kind of some of the fun, like, the silly behind the scenes of it. But I'm not going to, like, really explain exactly what it looks like until you get to see it on Christmas Day.
Yes. Very good.
So it'll be a little bit of a weird, like, episode that's a bit of an outlier in that way.
Mm-hmm. My favorite thing about shooting this photo was the absolute panic rush that you're in because it was snowing.
Yes.
And how you're quickly like, I want to do this, this, and this, which involved, like, elaborate lighting and everything. And well,
so wait, are we officially getting into it?
We are getting into it. Do you need to ring a bell or something?
We're in it. So now people know we're in it. And now you can say the lighting and stuff.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be like, the crazy lighting. You can, like, describe it.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, yeah. So in an absolute panic, I'm going to give you the vaguest description of what you wanted for the photo. You wanted our dogs in front of our house with beautiful the Christmas lights on the house and a warm glow coming from inside the house. The dogs have costumes on, which we will not describe, but you will see on the Instagram at Adventures in Dog Photography on December 25th.
And I just want to say that I have, like, so many dog costumes in the house right now because I didn't know. It's really hard to fit, especially, well, both of them, but Joshua's like a giant potato. Mm-hmm. And nothing fits him. And then Junie has three legs, so it's really hard to fit, like, most costumes on her. They kind of have to be modified. And I wasn't sure with the sizing and stuff, so I did my best to measure them, but it was difficult. So I ordered, like, six different costumes. And so there was, like, costumes coming from left and right on Amazon and Chewy and all these places. And so I finally compiled all the costumes. We tried them all on. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, no, this is definitely the idea.
Oh,
and
we really nailed it.
Like, the costumes that we chose are, oh my gosh, the best and so freaking adorable and so funny. And Junie's had to be modified a little, definitely, to fit her, like, missing leg. But it worked out quite well. The dogs mm-hmm. wore them proudly. And by the way, Josh and June are, like, epic heroes at wearing costumes. They're so, so good at it. And they're so tolerant. And that really, like, at this point doesn't faze them at all. Like, they'll walk around the house for hours wearing one and they'll just relax in it and settle because they're they're just it's so used just to it.
Just another day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
No worries. So yeah. So you wanted to have our house in the background, and the tricky thing is, like, you know, you wanted this light coming from inside the house, this warm, you know, beautiful, glowing. Like, you have, like, a Norman Rockwell sort of
yes, that was the idea, like, this voyeuristic kind of, like, view of inside the house, but then also combining that with the elements outside. But also, keep in mind, like, I wanted to shoot it specifically at night so that, like, the house could really glow. Because if this was daytime, the Christmas lights on the exterior of the house wouldn't show up, really, because it'd be too much ambient light. And then there would, you know, the orange glow coming from the windows obviously wouldn't be able to show up at all either. You have to really wait until the exterior levels of light are really quite low. I mean, in a perfect world, they'd be really low, but not pitch black. But when it was snowing, we kind of didn't have a choice when that happened. It was pitch black. It was like, whatever, 6 o'clock p.m., in New Hampshire in the middle of winter, which means pitch black.
Yeah. And especially where we live. It's dark. So, I was originally thinking that, like, oh, I should put a flash inside the house, like in our living room on the first floor, and basically have it blast out a bunch of, like, glowing warm yellow orange light. But then, like, one, I was thinking, like, that's probably going to be too complicated with what else we have going on. And two, it's going to be so dark outside that I think we can get away with literally just using our Hue lights.
Yeah.
Which are great because they're LED and they're controllable. You can brighten them, dim them, and change the color to whatever temperature you want.
Yeah. And we have those all over the house. So you can change. Yeah, they're like visible from every window, basically, upstairs, downstairs, everywhere. So you can kind of make a match. There was only one window in our house that, like, doesn't have a Hue light inside that room, and it didn't, like, match the other windows at all. But luckily, it was on the second floor, and I ended up in the final image not really getting the second floor anyway in the photo. It was mostly just the first floor. But yeah, basically, you could turn those to, like, a really beautiful warm orange hue, and then Hue, hence the name. And then I set my white balance to cloudy in my camera, and then it makes that orange light look even more, like, warm and toasty and magical.
Yeah, that's really nice. So it was important, I think, that the brightness not be, like, overwhelming inside the house. And I figured, since you're going to be outside and everything's going to be dark, you're probably going to have some, like, less than ideal, you know, settings, or like a high ISO or something like that.
What's the settings? Do we know
the exact settings? Let me get it.
You hold down the fort. Do a nice job. I'll be back.
Okay. Well, and there she goes. So we have the light inside the house. I was originally, again, thinking, like, oh, I will try to find a way to trigger, like, a huge flash on the inside. But what I didn't want to have happen is I didn't want the light to come shooting out the windows and really, like, look unnatural. Wanted to make it look as natural as possible. So I figured we're just going to go with some regular, you know, constant Hue lights. Oh, she's running. She's out of breath.
Laundry pile. I'm sitting on a couch with a pile of clean laundry on it that Sam folded so nice, and I just blasted through it.
Thank you.
You're right about the ISO.
Yeah.
ISO 2000.
2000, wow.
Yep, had to be. It just had to be. And you know what? In this day and age, don't even worry about it. ISO 2000 is like no big deal anymore.
Yes, depending on the camera, that's very manageable.
All right, yes. Do you want to hear the settings?
Yeah, just write all the settings
real quick. 1/200th of a second. That's because we were using lighting, and that's the sync speed on my Canon R3, 2.8, because I wanted everything to be as soft as possible.
Yeah.
Technically
speaking, I think your sync speed on that R3 is like 1/180th or something.
Is
but,
it?
Yeah, but well, you can't.
Why does it not make a difference when I put it at 1/200th?
Because I'm sure it does, but it's super subtle.
I don't ever see a black line of death.
No, you wouldn't see it at that point. But go on. If we're cutting hairs.
Okay, so get this. I used the worst lens that's ever existed ever for this photo.
This was a weird choice.
All right, everybody's going to be mad about this because this is a fan favorite lens. Everybody likes this lens. Most people like this lens.
Well, also, to be fair, before you even name it, we have the super old one.
Yes, but it's such a boring focal length. But I'll explain why I used it in a second. Yep. So I shot this at 25 millimeters, which was from the 24 to 70.
Yep.
Boo!
The original one.
Yes, but I will say the 24 to 70 I've never liked because it's such a medium, like, focal range. Like, it's such a, like, expected kind of traditional, like, it just, it doesn't move me either way. Like, it's not extreme enough to really feel anything more than just regular. I don't know how to describe it. It's the middle of the range.
It's a walk around lens. It's not a specialty lens, really.
Yeah. But I think in this case, I wanted it because the zoom, I did want this like zoom capability on this. And I wasn't sure going into it at the moment. It just has to strike me in the moment. Did I want a slightly more traditional looking scene, which would be probably more like an image shot at like 70 or like 50 mil or anything kind of like, you know, above that number. So 50 to 70, somewhere in there is going to be a little bit more like of a traditional look. And maybe that's what I want if this is more of like a Norman Rockwell kind of, you know, really like a fairy tale sort of scene that includes, also it includes a building, right? My house. And you have to be careful not to distort things like that too much because the lines all go really wonky. Like if the lens distortion will kind of screw up architecture and make it look pretty strange.
Yeah. So if you shoot this at 12, the house is going to look like it's leaning backwards and it's going to be super tiny. Yeah. You won't get any of the impact of the light from inside.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I kind of wanted to like be a little bit more zoomed, like closer to the windows and kind of bring the windows closer to the dogs by being able to zoom in a little bit. But 200 would have been way too extreme because I didn't have enough room to like back up and have the dogs and the house. The dogs would have had to be so far away from the house to get that. And I wanted that light from the Christmas lights on the front of the house spilling onto the back of the dogs. And if I had them so far away from the house for me to be far away with the 200 mil, it just wouldn't, I don't think it would look right at all. It's kind of a weird instinct these days. Like I pick up a lens based on instinct. You know what I mean? I can look at a scene and I feel something. I just feel it in my heart. So that's why I felt that this was the right lens because I wasn't sure if I wanted to go on the wider end of the lens, which is where I ended up, no surprise, versus the, you know, the tighter end of the lens. So this gave me the freedom to kind of play with that while I was in the moment because I knew I was going to be dealing with too many other factors to be like getting up and changing prime lens to prime lens to prime lens. I needed to be able to like zoom and move and change on the fly because I knew I was going to be dealing with Joshua and Junie's costumes and they're going to want treats and they're going to need to stay, but they don't stay very well. Then they, you know, need to wear a hat that doesn't fall off. And then they've got all these other moving parts to their costumes. And then you've got, you know, the different lighting like in the background that needs to sync with the foreground light, plus it's actively snowing, and so there's a lot to deal with. So I knew I needed the flexibility of a zoom lens.
Yeah, take one of the parts of the equation, you know, out of it. Take one factor out so you don't have to worry about changing all the different lenses. That's smart. And I mean, to your credit, I mean, you stuck with that lens the whole time and you didn't get caught up with like, oh, let's try this lens, let's try that lens, let's try this other lens. So that was great because there were a lot of moving parts. Back to our lighting, you know, the inside of the house not being a flash or anything, like I still wanted some of the light to be spilling out and onto the dogs. So we kind of faked that with a flash. So I've got, it's one of our Policy Buff Einstein 640s that we have, and it just has a little regular reflector cone on it or whatever, but it's on our front porch. It's not
just laying on the ground.
It's not on a stand. I just put a sheet of plastic down
because it was actively snowing.
And then laid the light on top of that, and I just ran an extension cable back into the house
through the front door, so we couldn't close the front door all the way
right through the front door.
Any traditional dad from like a dad movie would be so rip shit about that because the door was open for like 2 hours in the middle of a winter storm and the heat, all the heat, oh, that thermostat, wow. Was your dad a thermostat guy?
I never touched the thermostat.
No, but seriously, I know he listens and you're gonna have to be gentle, but was he a thermostat guy? Like, was he really interested in where the temperature was all the time and was controlling it?
That's a good possibility. I don't remember ever messing with the thermostat or knowing how it worked because it was one of those super old school ones.
Oh my
gosh. Like the little tiny little slider on it.
I know what you mean. Yeah,
like you can't control.
Dial-like.
Yeah, you can't control it with your phone like we do with ours.
Were you ever too cold or too hot?
I was always just right.
Oh, perfect. Well, my dad was really actually not a thermostat guy, but if you ever met my dad, he's like
he was just a giant. Off. Just no heat at all.
No, well, we had a burning wood stove or whatever anyway, which was like really not great for like heating up the house quickly or anything. It was always pretty cold in my house. But also my dad is if he listens, he totally agrees. He's like a giant 12-year-old. He's like the most fun of all time and probably the most like non-dad-like in most ways in terms of like laying down the law. He doesn't really lay down the law. He's very cool. He was my poor mom, because my dad was always the good cop, you know what I mean? So it was like, dad will let us, like, ask dad, he'll let us do anything. That's because like he had no rules, and you know that it's a whole thing, but he's pretty fun. He's a fun guy, so he was never a thermostat guy.
Yeah,
he's but also, I know some dads who were.
He was also very proud to tell us one day about his heating bill or whatever for the month that was like 37 cents.
It's because, like I said, he uses a wood stove. Yeah. But honestly, it's always very cold in his house.
Yeah.
But I don't think he minds. Like, he doesn't seem to be cold himself, so he's good.
Yep. Anyways,
get back to it. I know. I just want to know if Dave Haddix was a thermostat guy.
So yes, important thing with the light for the background, I wanted to match the warm light on the inside. So I did pop a gel onto the light. So I got this pack of gels probably 13 years ago or something like that.
They're like so smashed.
Yeah,
but we use them all the time.
If you have a wrinkly gel paper or regular gel paper, like, it does not matter. They will last forever.
But the state of our gels is embarrassing.
Whatever. I mean, they've got
like old tape all over them. Yeah,
and they've gotten the job done for over a decade.
Yeah, it's true.
A good investment from Calumet, which does not exist anymore.
Wow, think about all the things the gels have done over the years, including that shoot that you did of your friend dressed up as the Joker and everything was green.
Yep.
Remember, you greened everything in our whole apartment, was shooting up green, and then there was fog machines everywhere. It was really cool.
Thank you.
This was what, 11 years ago probably that you did that?
Something like that. So
you hate when I go off track.
We're just trying to tell a linear story. Okay. So we've got the orange light on the flash because the light inside the house is informing your choice of the background flash.
Right. You're not gonna like put a cool light like suddenly coming. Right. Say you gelled it blue instead of orange. Obviously it would be a cognitive dissonance there. Yes. You'd be like, I don't understand, why is the window light warm but then changes to cold once it hits the outside?
Right.
Doesn't make any sense.
So basically, if you're going for a Norman Rockwell style of picture, you don't want to necessarily make something that looks like you use flash.
Right. It needs to be like painterly.
Yes. And it should be subtle and it should be natural and the lighting shouldn't distract from what's happening.
Which to be fair, like, this is different for us, or at least for me, right? Because my normal style is kind of unapologetic flash, which removes... Now, I don't think it's poorly done, but I think it's heavy-handed. And I think it removes, like, all the shadows and everything, which makes my work look very comic booky.
No, but it's balanced so well that the majority of people that look at your photo are just wondering, like, how you edit it. They're not asking about the lighting.
I guess that's true.
You might be talking to a bunch of photographers right now, but...
But my work is not painterly or soft normally.
True.
Do you know what I mean? It's very like I pick conditions that are harder, like more. And I don't mean more difficult. I mean like the quality of light is typically like hard and punchy would be a good word. So this was like I love shooting these Christmas cards because they're a good excuse for me to go way outside the box and what I normally would do and how I'm normally comfortable shooting. Hence the 24-70, which I would never pick up at a client shoot. So I was like, no, that's okay because I'm doing something totally, totally different tonight. Doesn't have to fit any sort of standard. It can be creatively what I want it to be because it has this different purpose, which, by the way, I usually don't ever end up sharing these Christmas card images like on my social media, which is funny. I realized today that I don't ever share them, so I ended up sharing an older one today on my Facebook just because I was like, wow, it's Christmas time. I never have shared any of these because they don't really match my like typical aesthetic. Mm. And it's hard with like the grid on Instagram, for example, where you want to like convey a very specific message. I don't want to have one photo that's very soft and painterly and then suddenly everything else looks like my normal work because I feel like it's very it's kind of a confusing message. But anyway, I realized today that I don't really do that. So I did share one over my Facebook page today. It's a last year's Christmas card, which is like one of my favorites ever. But anyway, getting back to it, I wanted to mention the light from that you're talking about gelling that we put behind them on the stairs of the front porch we also, like, that had a second purpose, and that was also because it was actively, like, snowstorming, mm-hmm. and we wanted to freeze the snow in the air, like, capture the little snowflakes in the air all around them.
Right.
It ended up kind of, obviously, it morphed and changed as we were shooting, because we shot for about 2 hours, which is a riot, because I think our neighbors up the hill probably think we're, like, completely nuts, because they just moved in, like, last week.
We haven't met them yet, but I'm sure they were like, is there a lightning storm that's right. happening as well?
But that was like the reason for that light on the stairs was twofold. It was like, let's continue the lighting from indoors to make it feel like it's spilling out of the windows and onto the backs of the dogs, like my like Norman Rockwell inspiration. And you know, I don't even know if Norman Rockwell is the very best like artist to reference for this, because I don't know how much like painting of light he does, but it's like the voyeuristic.
It's a feeling.
Yeah, it's the feeling. Exactly. Yeah. It's like this classic Christmas feeling. I mean, I really think it's maybe embarrassing and maybe a little tacky and cheesy, but the truth is, like, I think the quality of light that I was after coming out of the windows was more like a Thomas Kinkade type of thing. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Where I wanted light, like orange warm light that was like cozy and evoked a certain feeling coming out of the windows. So it might have been a mashup of like those two. And I'm sure there's other people that paint kind of like similarly to Thomas Kinkade, which is probably a better reference than him, seeing as he was quite a controversial figure. But anyway, I digress.
All right. Well, it was nicely done. So we nailed the backlight. The other lights that's going on too, the ambient light would be the actual Christmas lights that are mm-hmm. on our little pillars in front of our house. So they're acting as kind of a fill, but also like a little bit of backlight and all that stuff. And of course, turning to bokeh if we, you know, have that you know, wide open aperture.
And I think the thing, like the big like buzzword that was in my head for this was like glow. Like I want like this holiday glow. And those lights, like the drizzle lights on the front of our porch and the ones wrapped around the pillars, they're all white. Oh, they're white and red, but they're mostly white. So they are like the epitome of that glow. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So it was like important to me to not destroy the ambient light, which would have been so easy to do if we put, you know, if we blasted too much artificial light from the front and the back.
Yeah.
We could have destroyed that.
Yeah. No, that's super, super important. You know, when you're trying to balance a flash in with ambient light is, you know, if the flash overpowers the ambient light, all of that beautiful warmth and glow that just goes away mm-hmm. and it just gets blasted into oblivion. It's very, very easy to screw it up. So, you know, we wanted to find that right balance. And so that's why for the front light, I wanted to make sure that we had a really, really big, really, really super soft light source. So we've got a big octa in the front, which is, again, a riot because we're out in a snowstorm. And so I've got, again, the neighbors, I'm sure, watching from their house being like, who are these people? And like, what do we move into? Because, you know, I've got this, 60-inch octa on our pro photo, and that's on a stand, and that is
sandbagged a couple sandbagged times. It was windy, and we live on the very tippity top of a hill.
Right. Well, we don't live on the top of the hill, but we live
of a hill. Of a hill. I said a hill because it goes even higher, and that's where our neighbors are, like higher than us. But we're on one part of the hill that's like crested, and it's really high up there, which is why our house got hit by lightning.
True. Different story for a different day. Yes. So yeah, having the super, super big light is really going to allow that light to very evenly spread, to be really soft when it hits the dogs, to not like to have a much like wider range for its like fall off. So you don't want to see like, oh, we lit this spot and then it just turns black, you know, like at this very specific other spot.
Yeah, like you mean the feathering where it hits the ground and things like all around?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Because again, the whole point is to not make it look like we use flashes.
Yeah, and I think, so the front light was, so big and soft, which at first that day I was like, wait, why are we using that one? Like you had to explain to me why you were making that choice creatively, and then I totally got that because you wanted it to feel, again, if we're going for glow and everything's really soft and glowy, it should feel like there's some like just natural light source that's lighting Joshua and Junie and not artificial. So I think you really pulled that off with the bigger light source choice. It was like much softer. I think the thing that's always a little bit more challenging with like a softer kind of light that's on lower power is it is harder to, you know, make sure that the dogs in the front of the dogs are like is super sharp. You know what I mean? Like you want them to be really well lit, and you really want enough light to like freeze any movement. And obviously with a lower, you know, light that's turned down lower, it's a little bit more of a risk. You're going to get like camera shake or, you know, because my shutter speed can only be at 1/200th because of all the limitations of the you know, the sync speed or whatever. So that was like my fear going in. I was like, well, wait, do we need a little more power on the front of these dogs so I can really like make them like super sharp and really, really freeze their like action, because you know they're going to move.
Yeah, because I think all the lights were down like to their lowest possible power because we're shooting in the pitch black darkness of night, with the exception of our porch lights and our first floor hue lights.
Yeah, but if you let enough light into your, if you like open your aperture wide enough and you bump your ISO, like you can actually make really soft like dim light sources quite powerful, especially now with the capabilities of like high ISO on cameras. So I think that, yeah, you're right, there's truth to that. And then also there's like, we could, I kind of like amped up the feeling of the really beautiful you know, window light and Christmas lights and stuff by manipulating the camera settings. But then, yeah, the fear is always that the dogs are going to be kind of lower quality in the foreground because of the high ISO, because of the slower shutter speed. But it ended up working out fine, because Joshua and Junie, while they do move, they're pretty good overall. They're pretty good. I will say Joshua was worse than Junie that night, like behaviorally, in terms of like just staying perfectly still, which is so funny because Junie is normally the problem child. But Joshua, for some reason, just kept breaking his stay, and finally went to leave and let himself inside.
Yep, because the door was still kind of open a little bit. At one point, he just turned around. He slowly, slowly waddled up.
Waddled away in his costume.
Yep, and then just nudged open the door and just went back inside.
He's like, Mom, I'm freezing. It's actively snowing. It's been 2 hours. That's enough. Yes. No treats are interesting anymore.
Poor kid.
But Junie will do anything for treats, so she was not going to check out.
Yeah. Now, you did make a really good point when we were shooting, and this is definitely the case with Josh and June, and I'm sure as you photograph, you know, groups of dogs, you'll find this is the case for them as well, is that, you know, in our case, we have one dog, Joshua, who has seen it all and done it all, and it takes a lot to get his attention.
Yeah, like if you want to get a great expression from him, like ears up, alert, maybe a slight head tilt type of thing, you've got to go pretty like over the top with like the excitement or the treat or the sounds or whatever.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Junie is so excitable,
yes,
that she requires a tiny
very little stimulation.
Yes, very little stimulation. So finding the balance between the two of them, because if you get Junie too excited, she's gonna come. If you don't get Joshua excited enough, then he won't look.
Exactly. It's a really tough balance to get them both looking and alert without Junie having broken her stay because I got too excited.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And then the other thing is like sometimes she'll look alert and great, but I didn't do enough to get him also involved. And so I need to like work on getting both of them at the same time, which is obviously, you know, as any dog photographer knows, like the biggest challenge to a group shot is really making sure all dogs look excellent and they all look engaged, which is can be so hard because there's always one problem child at least.
Yes. So after much trial and error and lots of shooting, we did nail the two of them together. We didn't have to do a head swap or a dog replacement or whatever, like, so that they're really together. They're great. What did you do in post to make this photo what you wanted it to be?
Oh my, well, so exciting. Okay, so this is wild. I have not used generative fill like at all really yet, except for just like to look at it and like try it out and just be like, wow, this is wild. This is interesting. Oh, the only thing that I've like used it for practically in like everyday work since it came out is like removing leashes. Like sometimes I still think content aware does a better job, but sometimes I'm like, oh wow, okay, well that's done. You know what I mean? Like if it's a little more of a complicated leash removal, say it goes under the dog's armpit, for example, then if you try generative fill, sometimes it's crap and sometimes you're like, oh my gosh, that's perfect. So yeah.
So this is Adobe's like AI generation stuff in Photoshop.
Yes. Okay. Yep. Yes. So I haven't used it, again, aside from the basic utility of like maybe removing a leash here and there, on any of my client stuff. I'm not sure, because truly I'm not sure what the legality of that is. I think at this point now it's all well and good. I think when it was in beta, it was technically not allowed to be used commercially, and commercially does apply to anything you're charging money for, so any paying client. So I didn't want to do it then. And the other thing is, like, definitely there's a moral kind of issue that I have with changing things, like deliberately changing things from reality. I don't know if that's like that's kind of an, I mean, that's a whole episode in and of itself, because I'm not a journalist, right? Like, I'm not necessarily a journalist. And you could argue that I have been manipulating scenes for 10 plus years now, because I use very exaggerated lenses, for example. Like, I exaggerate a scene. I exaggerate the size of a dog in a scene using perspective. So that's all kind of creative, right? Like, that's art. That's creative. Yeah,
and
it's
and
the
you
way...
can, and you use Photoshop to take out a person, to take out a leash, to, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So you could... Sorry, hold on. I lost my train of thought. You could argue that I've been doing like that as a manipulation of reality anyway for 10 years or 13 years now with dog breath, just based on my style. But I really pride myself on like the fact that people often think my images are like Photoshopped or fake or whatever, and they're like 100% real. And I'm so proud of that, because it's a lot of work to, you know what I mean, to specifically nail that technique of like how I want to present the dog in a scene and their size relative to the background. And I work really, really hard to get it all right in camera. And then, of course, there's like color and contrast and post-processing. And then there's also like removing leashes and things like that, right? Because you want to present the final product to the client. And if the dog can't be off leash, then you need to know how to remove a leash. That's all well and good. So, but with this whole generative fill thing, I've felt quite conflicted about the potential for people to completely change backgrounds and for people to fully fake things that aren't there and maybe not work as hard as they could in camera because they think that they can just like fake it afterwards, which, to be fair, I think we're still pretty far from that stuff working seamlessly. I've just played around with it here and there, and I'm like, some of the stuff is like, oh, that's really kind of unique and interesting, and then other stuff I'm like, oh my god, it's horrifying and it's really bad and it's like something out of a horror movie half the time. So anyway, that was my preface to say this is the first time I've ever like used the generative fill to kind of add an element. And again, this is because this is not a paid client piece of artwork. This is a picture of my own dogs. It's a whimsical Christmas time photo, and I wanted to kind of try what it would feel like. So I added, so basically in the left kind of side of the frame, it was a little bit visually uneven because our porch just ended, and then there was like kind of this black space where there was just like sky and ground and nothing.
Yeah, so, and you're seeing the tree line from across the street, which is pitch black dark.
Yeah, exactly. So it was like kind of nothing right there. So I mean, it was snowing and we kind of had the snow lit up all around them, which was amazing and everything, but it felt a little visually like unweighted. And I thought, okay, well, for my Christmas gardens, because I'm playing around with this and, you know, it's kind of like a fun piece of Christmas artwork and not necessarily like a client shoot, let me see what it would look like if I just generated in like a pine tree, like fill in the negative space with like a pine tree that has like white Christmas lights. So I tried it for a while. And like I said, most of the like situations that it gave me were just horrendous. I mean, it made no sense at all. But after working on it for a while and trying to kind of refine my prompts, I finally got a tree in there. And I was like, wow, that looks like a real pine tree. That's incredible. And it had the same kind of white lights like glowing on it. So I just put that on the left to fill in the like empty space. And I really like cropped it in from the left as well. So it's just kind of the edge of the pine tree, like feathering in. So it kind of gives you just a sense of, it's almost like framing the image. And then the other thing I did was there's a pine tree on the left. And then on the right was just like the edge of our house. And it was like this really stark edge of our house. So it just added little tiny foreground, like pine.
Like branches?
Branches, kind of. Yeah, that are kind of also framing the other side with white lights on them. So that looked pretty good. I wasn't going to use the one with the tree on the right in the final version. But when I put the Christmas card into like the template as a 5x7 crop, it felt like so weird without something on the right side of the frame to like kind of just finish the image. So I put just the edges of like a generated tree branch in there. Yeah, that's, I'm trying to think if I did anything else with it. Oh, I added little bushes, little tiny bushes in front of our...
Did some landscaping.
Well, because our house is still quite stark. It's a brand new house. And yes, we've lived here for 3 years now, but it was brand new when we got it. And there's no like real landscaping in the front. So it's kind of stark in front of our porch. It's just a concrete porch and then it just drops off. So I put it in these like way off in the background, little tiny like bushes that just kind of covered up the concrete, like the really stark concrete. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And other than that, just had the best time like playing with like just editing in a style that I normally wouldn't, which again is this really soft, like kind of ethereal sort of fairy tale style, which I never do. So I made the colors really warm and made everything really soft, and I put a little bit of like glow on the backgrounds and make it feel really like a painting, you know. So it was fun because I never ever edit like that. That's not my normal style. So it gives me an excuse to be like really creative and think outside my normal box.
Awesome. Well, you did a beautiful job with it.
Thank you. I'm really happy with it.
And let me tell you the power of this image and this card. I've only given two of them away. One of them is actually to the guy that works at the post office that we frequent.
Peter.
Yes. Shout out to Peter.
He's so lovely.
And I gave him one and it almost brought him to tears, which I thought was very lovely. But then I gave one today at Joshua's vet appointment, and I handed the vet tech that I see the card in the envelope and said, hey, this is for you guys. And he let me know like, oh, like thank you so much. And, you know, it's just as I was about to check out, and he was like, hey, and our checkout system is down for today, so I'm going to call you later and we can, you know, cash out over the phone. I was like, oh, that's fine. And so then they called me later and they're like, hey, we love the card so much. Today's vet visit is on the house.
Oh my God, that's what a Christmas miracle.
Which is great because that's like a $250.
That's so like, amazing. Visit.
Yeah. So,
the power of Christmas love.
Yes. And especially with these two dogs. Yeah. It's perhaps our best Christmas card ever. Can't wait
it's
to share
favorite.
It with everyone.
It's my favorite card we've ever done.
Yeah.
It is. And I'm so grateful because, you know, not to get too like down or sad or anything because it's a very happy time. But as Joshua gets older, you know, he's 12 now. Like, I just am aware that I get to do only so many Christmas cards. You know what I mean? Like starring Joshua. And we've done one with him every single year, except for I think 1 year since we adopted him. And it's been a tradition for us. And it's so fun to think up the idea. And it started with just Joshua by himself, like with milk and cookies. And then it you know, graduated and changed once Junie joined our family. And now I was doing like these tandem Christmas card photos. And it's been really like so special of a journey. And to know that like it's another year that I get to look at him and there he is, his little graying face. And I get to do another special narrative featuring him as the star. It just means so much to me. So, you know, I really wanted to make sure it was really special this year as he's getting older and just to covet, you know, this time we have together. And I'm so happy with it. It makes me so happy. It makes me want to cry when I look at it. But it's also really funny.
For sure. Both of those things. Those dogs are delivering the Christmas joy this year.
Yes, definitely.
So please be on the lookout for that. Christmas Day at Adventures in Dog Photography. We're going to be off again next week, but we will see you guys in the new year. And Kaylee, you only have one more song left for 2023.
What? Okay, Sam, play me in. Christmas, Christmas time is here. Oh, it's time for joy, all covered in dog hair. We'll kiss the pups neath the mistletoe with great big hopes that they haven't eaten yellow snow. Oh, Christmas, Christmas holidays. Let's all practice our sits and our stays. Very good girls and very good boys. Bork, bork, bork is the Yuletide noise. Brand new toys, all green and red. 3, 2, 1, and it's lost its head. Good thing I didn't pay $16.99. Got it from the bargain bin and that's just fine. Merry Christmas!
Adventures in Dog Photography with Kaylee Greer and Sam Haddix is a Dog Breath production. Follow us on Instagram at Adventures in Dog Photography and be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.